Yeah, yes, Glenn.
David, if I might say again, mm-hmm. if I may go back slightly to the question of the debate, mm-hmm. can anybody recall why they must have stopped? I seem to recall that the last one was probably in 2003. Mm-hmm. And I remember that because that was the occasion on which Richard Seely made his name.
That's correct. Yeah, I was the moderator at the time.
I remember those.
And when I was exiting CBC, I remember a Caucasian lady asking me if he was the leader of the party, and I said no. And he said, well, he should be. So I recall that. I did the last one, yeah, so I'm responsible.
They were debating foreign policy.
And he came up against Ms. Miller.
Dame Miller. And he made his name because of outstanding performance. Yeah. So he became a minor star or star out of that. And these occasions are used to make or break people. And therefore, in a climate in which I think it's fair to say that no stars have emerged yet from the last parliament, and there were two people who have short glimpses of political stardom then in future. I think that would have been an occasion where they would have started some possible potential leaders who could rise to the occasion and become important personalities in the future. Because
there's another dimension to this, though, and I think may well be, I mean, that this campaign is showing up certain of those weaknesses. When I was a kid growing up and I played a lot of cricket and stuff, one of the things it taught me was that practice is something that is absolutely essential. You can only improve by practicing.
Right.
And a number of people in this country lack the capacity to properly interact because they have failed to take those opportunities. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's that weakness associated with communicating with the public. I think that members of the administration have run away from this opportunity far too often, and as a consequence, you see this lack of confidence on some people's part and the inability to actually articulate your case. But there's another important reason why you needed to have that interaction. Let's take the Prime Minister. He spoke often in Parliament and that sort of thing, and he read speeches and spoke to the Democratic Labour Party a lot. But often he seemed to miss the issues that people had on their minds at the time. That is where the interaction with either the public or the media acting on behalf of the public becomes important. So that if you miss something that is perceived to be important, then the media and or the public mm-hmm. will be there to say, but Prime Minister, what about this? What about that? This is where I believe a lot of ground has been lost. The notion that you can ignore that is flawed. And we're going to see whether my assessment turns out to be right or wrong at the end of the day, but that's how I see it, Glenn.
It is interesting, David. I have from time to time said that the Prime Minister marches to the beat, his own beat, and his own drum, and he beats the drum in his own way. It's interesting because do you realize that the Prime Minister does not have, as far as I know, a press secretary?
No, he doesn't.
And all the other prime ministers and premiers have had persons perform those roles. So it's interesting that he himself, I think the last press secretary would have been Natasha King.
Yeah.
Natasha King. So it's interesting that for these past, 5-6 years or so at least, he has not had a functioning press secretary. So that must tell you something about his how he thinks and perceives the media and his role and interaction with the media. Like I said, I don't therefore want to fall into the trap of trying to delve into his mind and speak to him for further information.
Yeah.
But I think, as an outsider, I find that interesting that all the other prime ministers have had press secretaries, and he has chosen not to have.
You know, one of the things that I struck, and I think, David, you and I have discussed this already, is that the strategy seemed to have worked for him in the past. And I believe that he is true to the fact that, you know, up to the last election, he never communicated that way either. He never held press conferences. There was never that interaction. And all like me were saying he needed to do it. He didn't do it, and he won the election, you know, against all odds. And I think what he's basically doing is saying, well, clearly I was right. and, you know, I'm just continuing with business as usual because there seems to be no appetite. If there was an appetite for that level of communication, he wouldn't have won the last election.
The question is, though, to what extent have we seen that same approach dominate the campaign now?
Well, not only the campaign, but I think the outside of a few of the ministers who interact with the public on a regular basis, once we went into election mode, everybody seemed to have retreated to their own space and just remained there.
You mean the 30 constituencies?
The 30, yeah.
30 by elections?
By elections, yeah. That's what they've done.
Which is
they've really not defended the party in public, certainly not in the fora offered by us.
But I think, though, that you have to separate the People's Parliament from the individual, because I think that on occasion when you reached out to individuals,
they responded.
Okay. Chris Sinclair called the program and we chatted one day.
Don Valenis has been here on more than one occasion. But I said once the election had been called, they withdrew.
But no, Minister Innes did message me during People's Parliament. He asked, where is the representative? And he said, anytime we are short, we should contact him. So the individuals are able to represent.
He asked where the representative of his party
was. I don't know what he asked me. But,
perhaps you are the press secretary.
He was.
But in that context also, what about social media? What is our assessment of how they have used social media? In a structured way, in a less than structured way. So far in this campaign, it doesn't seem to me to have been as structured. I mean, I like the idea that both major political parties have used YouTube and Facebook for their meetings.
Mm-hmm. I think thank God.
Yes. Indeed, Glenn.
But David, what I think was used very effectively this campaign is the WhatsApp, you know, messages that have been circulating and so on.
Yeah.
Some of them not flattering to me, but you know, they've used it effectively. And because the thing is, you don't really know who these things are coming from. And then you have agencies like Bajan Puppets.
Yeah.
And others that have popped up where they're sending these subliminal signals in relation to one or other party, and you don't really know who is behind them. But I think it's very effective in terms of getting people thinking along a particular path.
David, I think Peter has happened onto something very interesting. I get the impression there's something that there's a feeling that there's no doubt that the media environment and Barbados and setup has changed drastically since the last election, particularly the social media's involvement and potential and power and influence are concerned. And therefore, there seems to be, if you perceive that there's a hostility towards you, therefore you go to other media, because you don't have to depend on, you don't have to depend on the traditional media as much as you have in the past, because there are other avenues, and then therefore you tend, in those cases, to adopt what the Americans have said in their policy and describe as a siege mentality or a bunker mentality, where you feel people are opposed to you, they're against you, hunker down, protect yourself, indulge in group speak, and only believe and hear what you hear from those others, all the rest are against you. So that might be part of the whole syndrome where the traditional media star combination that might feel like we don't need you as much as before because you can depend on other things to represent us.
But let me tell you what I see as being the caution in social media. Multiple personalities for one person or one group of individuals, and two, people who are not resident in Barbados that have no intention of being in Barbados to affect you in a positive way by being here. What I find when I, for example, used to follow closely our VOB chat when we had one before we shut it down, lots of times when we went offline, it's the people who are in London, Canada, Beirut, all over the world, who tells me I'm offline. 30, 40 emails from outside of Barbados saying, your station is offline, I can't hear you. And nobody here calls and says, I can't hear you. And there are people in offices following us online as well. So one of the challenges I see about utilizing social media is to ensure that you're getting the pulse of those here and not people who support you wherever they are because of what you've done for them in the past. One of the things that stand out in my mind in this political campaign in 2018 is this. You have a government that has been in office for 2 terms, running on their history from 1966. I find that curious, because there is a body of people who will know nothing about anything after 1980 or 81. And therefore, to bring back 66 is asking for nostalgia that they don't have, unless their parents instilled it in them.
No, but that's to inform them of the past, though.
That's what it is.
And to give them a sense of history.
No?
Yes.
No, David?
But I don't think that there's anything wrong with giving that perspective. But you can't leave it there exclusively. You got to say, look, in other words,
I'm a political neophyte.
We are the party of Errol Barrow. All of them have done this. The Barbados Labour Party has often reminded people, and even in this campaign, you hear them go back to Grantley Adams. All right? We are the party of. These are the things that we have done in the past. We have brought you here, and these are the things that we propose to do in the future. So, Glenn.
My trouble with the... I don't follow Facebook, have never had, because I felt that the whole setup, the way it's structured, the way it operates, is that it makes it vulnerable to what is called organized spontaneity, where people can so structure and organize and manipulate people to do their bidding, to put out their point of view, that it seems spontaneous, like Dennis said, multiple personalities or persona or names for person, but they're doing the same job. Mm-hmm. And therefore, to me, that tends to invalidate the whole process. And therefore, I have never really, people tell me about semi-excerpt, but I've never really gone online to follow it, because they think it's too easily manipulative. What's the term?
Manipulative. Manipulated. Actually, Glenn, I have seen two people. I have seen a person sign on as two different people and carry on a conversation with themselves to stir up trouble on brass tacks. Yeah, I have seen it.
Okay. There you are. How much store can you therefore put into the validity, the legitimacy,
at the end of the day, Glenn, at the end of the day, it is the strength of argument that matters.
It is
how many times a particular person get on Facebook and cuss somebody, because I see that. There are people that I see who spend, I wonder what else they have to do for the whole day. That's all I see coming from them.
All day long, every day, listen, don't know how to get
and in. Some of them spew so much venom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I am just, but for me, at the end of the day, it is the strength of the argument. There are people on both sides of the political fence who can put up an argument. You say, yeah, that sounds reasonable. The other guy really needs to counter this, because this has some validity in it, you know?
David, one
social media is unsociable.
One more thing on that aspect is that the social media now have come to replace, for the laxity of language and rules, and no rules that really apply except the police intervenes at some point under the Computer Act. Mm-hmm. But the rules and the standards are different, or maybe non-existent. It has replaced the kind of talk that used to go under the street light, the standpipe, the rum shops, the argument, and people use this medium now to vent, to clear out their spleen.
It's not all negative, though.
Oh yeah, that is what they seek to do. And it seems some of them get there. You know, remember, there's a man called Andy Warhol, an artist, a very famous artist. I believe Dennis would know about Andy Warhol.
He said that
in the final analysis, he was looking at technology. In the final analysis, every man will want and get his 15 minutes of fame. And people use the social media to build names and reputations and personas for themselves, because it gives them social understanding.
And what it has done is it has caused a president to now be handling president by Twitter. So there you go. It has worked for one. And
then I say, when we come back, we do this seat by seat. A lot of people,
yes,
you know,
we will be doing that.
They want false advertising. Seat by seat, constituency by constituency.
But not only that, they keep asking, where's Peter's poll? Brass Deck Sunday, in association with Williams Industries Incorporated. You're with the moderators, Sanka Price, Corey Lane, Peter Wickham, David Ellis, and yours truly. We go
and Glenn Murray on the line.
Glenn Murray on the line. Sorry, thanks for
and Lisa Gail missing in action. Well, missing the lone female yet again.
Well, last Sunday was Mother's Day, mm-hmm. and she did ask to be excused as she had to do motherly and wifely duties as a saint. And I'm sure as a father and a husband yourself, you would have to have done those duties sometime during the course of the day.
But since you throw that out there, I want to say happy anniversary to the wife. Today is our 6th anniversary.
And you so say
I'm,
no here?
I'm over here at 1:15 exactly.
Congratulations. Well, congratulations. From all of us, tell her we commiserate.
So you guys want to get this seat by seat,
seat by seat.
But I'm not doing that. I'm not part of that at all. Because I don't waste my time with that kind of analysis. Do you all can go along with that?
There'll be no analyzing from David.
Not from me.
Let me just take the opportunity
to respond to the poll. Bring your mic closer to you, Peter. And put your headphones on.
Sorry, there's not going to be a poll.
And go forward.
There's not going to be a poll this year. I'm fairly certain that that's not the case. We can't possibly do it now. Today would have been the day of publication. There has been a custom, certainly for the last 20 years, that we have had a poll election Sunday before the elections. There's no agreement that I have with the nation. I have no contract with the nation on an ongoing basis. It's usually that someone has commissioned one and it has been published. And I've said a couple of times, just for purposes of clarity, that Barbados is the only country in which the media commissions polls. Usually polls are commissioned by private entities and they're supplied to the media. Last election, you would recall that there was a first and second poll. The second one was one which I privately raised the funding for, and we were able to release it to the media, having had it funded privately. I've been advised by one media house that the opportunity is there for me to do that again. The directors of CADRES have taken the decision that we're not going that road. We will wait for either the media to commission something. We're not going to go and look for private funding, and that's essentially the position that we have taken. So there won't be a poll this time. People can speculate as to the reasons why. We have been polling, and I want to take the opportunity to thank people who have responded so readily to our pollsters in the field. But unfortunately, none of that data will be made public. It belongs to a private entity. And as much as I have been twisting and turning, that entity has determined that they will not release that data. As far as the seat by seat count is concerned, I did what I could in terms of the available data. So on the
from the private pool?
Well, not from the private pool, but in the Sunday Sun today, there's an analysis in terms of seat strength and weakness. This is based on the last election. And I always made the point that swing is calculated from the last election to the current one. So in terms of that, it's a good indicator of which are the strongest or weakest seats. Now, of course, poll data would supplement that. But, you know, in the absence of poll data, we can just look at that. Excuse me, and you can see clearly where the stronger and weaker seats are. And I think the strongest one would be St. John, and that's in the picture. And then the weakest seat would be, I think it's St. Michael West Central would be the weakest seat. The presumption based on all of the analysis and so on is that you will have a swing towards the Barbados Labour Party, consistent with history and consistent with the fact that we've only had one occasion where a sitting government has actually gained support. Usually once they are in government, they lose support. And that was in 1999. So historically, there's been a swing towards. So the assumption is that there will be a swing towards the Barbados Labour Party. And the question is, how much of a swing towards the Barbados Labour Party would be needed to put them into office? And the fact is that you need less than 2% swing to put the Barbados Labour Party into office. Less than 2%.
Does that factor in the fact that this year we have 135 candidates in the field?
What do you mean? You mean in terms of the third-party candidates?
Well, and independents. Yeah. We have 135 candidates registered for this election. We've never had that.
Yeah, that's an important point. And if you have, the analysis today shows big swing and small swing elections. If this is a small swing election, those candidates make a difference. So if you have a 2% swing, definitely those third-party candidates will make a difference. My sense is that it will not be a small swing election, because if you look at the small swing elections, they have always been followed by a big swing election. And you have 71, 81 being the two examples. The 2013 election was like a 71 or 81, which is a small swing election, where there was a movement within there that was somewhat irregular. What you will have this time, my sense is that if you go on history, is that you will have a big swing. If you have a big swing, then the political parties that gain less than 1% of support will not make a difference in terms of the election.
But Peter, if you may, your polling, does it really take into account the level of the strategy right now by the Democratic Labour Party of how treating everything as a by-election and the strong house-to-house campaigning that they're doing within constituencies? My sense about it is, since I live in one of those very closely fought constituencies, is that that is making a difference.
Yeah, and I agree. I agree that that's the logic, and this is the reason why the entity that has commissioned polls on this occasion has commissioned constituency polls. Because I think the mistake we made in the last election was that we did national polling and we assumed that the national swing would determine the outcome. Mm-hmm. The reality is that the constituency polls, when I look back at them, the constituency polls were a lot more accurate in terms of suggesting what was likely to happen. So on this occasion, we have been doing heavy constituency polling to essentially verify what exactly you're saying. Because, yeah, everything is clear, the LP strategy was a constituency-by-constituency strategy. The other thing is
that is peculiar to them. The Barbados Labour Party would have assumed that they could do otherwise.
And they should. My thing is that they shouldn't assume they can do otherwise. So I think they have to also be on the ground.
So haven't they been on the ground too?
Yeah, but based on what is happening within the two constituencies closest to me, I get the distinct impression that the amount of resources being put into this basic house-to-house canvassing is such that it is having an impact. That is definitely the impression that I'm getting on the ground.
You know, David, what I think the 2013 election demonstrated was how effective the DLP was in relation to the person-to-person, the hand-to-hand combat. Because that hand-to-hand combat seemed to have turned around a national scenario. So I think part of the reason why we're talking more about the DLP doing it is because they have had greater success with doing it. The other thing is that it requires a lot of resources, and the presumption is that being in government, they would have greater access to resources. Corey?
And you throw that at me.
Yeah, because you're a man on the ground. You're the one who wanted the...
My problem with the ground really is that from what I'm hearing, a lot of people, they are not satisfied with what's going on, but they're not prepared to vote. A lot of people are saying they're staying home. Mm-hmm. As someone who stayed home last election, and I'm sure there are some persons here that stay at home as well, I have really made a 180 on that position, really studying all that's going on around me. I think that citizens, generally speaking, forget candidates for a moment, because my thing in relation to voting, I think that citizens must be able to send a message to the electorate. It's the only opportunity you get. So if you go to the poll, I think you need to vote for, vote against, or even, I don't want to advocate spoiling the vote, but I think that the voter turnout must be in a way that people demonstrate, to, even if you are in a sure seat, I think you should go to make sure you still support that candidate, or go out and vote against regardless, so that your voice is registered. Because I would like the 135 people at the end of the day to be able to reflect on what the majority of the voting population is saying. I would like to see that 62% turnout, something in the region of 80% in this election.
But speaking of, do we have any indication of turnout for the special election that was held?
That's the question I was going to ask, because I saw a figure being saying that it was over 70% of the persons who actually vote, who actually turned out. Mm-hmm. I think I saw 75%, but I'm speaking on the correction here, but it was over 70%. That's why I saw it. That it was not official.
The problem, Sanka, is that the special electors list is always accurate, because the special electors list is people that are existing, that exist. The problem with the national voters, this as I've repeatedly said, is that it is so bloated by dead people that can't vote, people who reside overseas, who have no intention of coming back to
Barbados. The percentages are always wrong.
Yeah, so we will not get to 80%. We could pretty much forget about that. Yeah. I think that our fluctuation will be within 5% in relation to things. So if last time it was around 60, if we get up to 65 this time, we've done well, in my opinion.
The other question I wanted to put on the table to you, Peter, now in talking about constituency to constituency, and also Corey and Sanka. With the release of the manifesto, have you seen anything, the manifestos, have you seen anything in it that you think will cause a groundswell of support either one way or the other? Both parties have now indicated that if necessary, they will go to the IMF. The DLP, of course, says if we get the $500 million from Hilton and Hyatt and BNTCL, and notice no Sam Lord's Castle, or perhaps I missed it reading. They will, if necessary. Okay, so they've both now said the IMF on the card somewhere in the background, if. But marijuana, medical and otherwise, being freed up, does that change in any way?
I don't link manifesto and groundswell together ever. I'll tell you why. Because I don't think the vast majority of people really
bother with manifesto.
Bother with manifesto. That's the truth. But I've seen some, one of the key things for me in the manifesto, the Barbados Liberal Party manifesto, is public servants. I think that that is intended to capture that large chunk of persons. Because you have the Democratic Labour Party coming on to the end of their tenure saying they are not even going to the table to talk. And here you have the Barbados Labour Party promising. And I anticipated more of the discussion in relation to the public asking where they're going to get the funds for that. Now hearing where you're going to get the funds for all type of other things. But my question is, where are you going to get the funds for that? Because to me, that is more substantial.
Glenn, you were saying something?
Well, really, I what I would like to probably ask Peter is if, you know, there's been a traditional thought that St. Michael, numerically, and also Christchurch are the two areas that determine the election numerically. I was wondering if Peter had any signs that, based on what he's pointing about, that would still remain the same in this instance.
No, you win St. Michael and Christchurch, you win the election. That's the general thing.
16 seats.
Yeah, it's 16 seats. And not only that, I mean, the urban corridor is in mood. I think what the DLP succeeded in doing in 2013 is that they were able to treat to the urban corridor in Barbados.
Right.
You know, basically making Christchurch and even St. Philip parts of that urban corridor. Right. And that was the basis of their success. So the question is whether or not they can do that again this time, or whether they will be able to reverse those fortunes. The point, though, I'm anxious to hear you respond to, though, I mean, Glenn, as a person who does have a bit more historical perspective than me, is the extent to which the 2013 election was like the 1981 election and the 1971 election, in terms of the result ending up with the what we call a pack of cigarettes, in terms of the number of seats that are within that range. Because when you look at the document that I presented today in the paper, you can see that you have like about 10 seats that are within, like, say, 200 and something votes, 100 and something votes, which is all within a swing range that is very small. So I don't know what you think about that analysis, Glenn, based on your knowledge of 71 and 81. 71, it was 9, I think?
71, I was living abroad. So that's the only
so
election.
You don't know about it either.
That's the only one I want to witness personally in Barbados.
Well,
it's my first meeting I attended in 1951 for the right to vote. I've been here for all others. In 1981, I suspect 1981 from my recollection, that would have come after Tom Adams had been to the IMF.
And the mini budget.
There were some issues there, and I think that would have generated some slippage in support for the BLP.
No, don't misunderstand the question. The question isn't like what caused it. I'm just saying that the similarity of the outcome with the several seats where you have a very small margin.
Yeah,
and that
laying
a groundwork for a big swing election, which would have been the one in the next election,
86.
Which is
86,
76.
I think that's a fair conclusion.
Yeah, okay.
By 2013, was another creature all of its own, you know. Surprising outcome.
Well, it was a surprising outcome because we expected it to be a change election. But when you really think about it, it was the election that we should have had if you follow the two-term cycle and you follow the 71-81 analysis. The outlier would have been the 99 election, because that should have been the second-term election. But if you follow the way the system goes, or where the history goes, 2013 was exactly what it should have been, which is an election that resulted in almost change, but no change.
But if I might say also, let me put on my BIP app now. In 2013, I was intimately involved in that campaign, and St. Michael had been stamped out for special treatment, special consideration. What I've noticed that this year is that there seems to be more emphasis on St. Michael in a more structured, organized, enthusiastic, systematic way where this time around than in 2013.
Who managed it in 2013? Who managed St. Michael in 2013?
It was broken down to a number. Now, if you had certain,
section.
I think there were two or three people who had certain sections of St. Michael as a group to look after. But I'm saying the emphasis seems to have been more coherent, more systematic, more dynamic in this case than before.
Are you prepared to go as far as to say that the campaign is better managed this time than last time?
Let me ask this question. Let me ask this question of the political pollster in the middle. Peter, is there any seat that has emerged in 2018 as a bellwether seat? I know we usually say St. George in past elections. Is there a new bellwether in this election?
No, I would say that, it's been St. George South, there was Christchurch East once, that was an indicator.
Mm-hmm.
That's no longer the case. I think in this instance, the weakest seat really would be, as I said, is St. Michael Central. But the point
St. Michael Central is...
Arthur Holder.
Arthur Holder.
And Steve Blackett.
Because it's already 39 votes.
Okay, yeah.
But in the scheme of
what
things...
What about Southeast with Santiago Brasso only winning by 12 last
12,
time.
Yeah. You have that one as well.
No, but that's the BLP seat. Remember, we are
swinging. Oh, you're saying you're swinging toward the BLP.
Towards the BLP, yeah. Right? So the BLP seats, we don't...
My DLP spokesperson told me that seat is going to be shifted as well as the city. The two predictions that were made to me positively.
Right, which is an interesting argument.
Positive.
Which is an interesting argument because I also made the argument that there's really only one time in our history when there's been a swing towards the party and the party has actually lost seats, which would have been in 1981.
Right.
So my thing is, if the Dems can pull that off again and actually be able to shift Bridgetown or St. James Central, mm-hmm. South Central?
Which one?
St. Michael's South Central.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If you're able to switch either of those, then essentially you have a history-making reality. But other than that, I would look at the weakest one, which is Central. But the thing about it is that there's a four of them in there, which is not only Central, but West Central and West.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all, 193 votes, 39 votes, and 125 votes. And I would say that cumulatively, those St. Michael's seats would be really the crucible of the swing. If you can see a swing being manifested in those of anything at the order of 2 or 3 percentage points, then essentially it's all over. But, you know, the interesting thing, as I said, is that you have 3 seats within a 2% range. You have within a 3% range, you have 3 within a 5% range. Sorry, with a 6% range, there's an additional 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get up to 9%, you know, you're looking at a 10-seat movement, which is really a significant difference between this election and the last one, where you could have micromanaged better because it was a small swing election. So it's going to be interesting, and I think that the early indicators that we see in, let's say, any of those 3, which would be West Central, West, and St. Michael Central, will tell us a lot about where the